Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
Nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
I don't like blood and guts, but I love them when they're lengthily discussed. Cause nothing's more relaxing than the cries of death and lust. So spend a 10. Welcome to
With Gorley and Rust.
With Chorley and Glust. Tom Chorley and Peter Glust are here with us today,
Tom,
Matt.
Tom Chorley and Peter Glust. We've been trying to get these guests. How long is... I mean, I think that's why we started the podcast. We wanted a vehicle to get Tom Chorley and Peter Glust.
Yes.
Guest? Glust?
Glust.
Glust. And he's a guest. I'm frazzled because we're in the presence
finally,
of greatness.
Finally. And we're not going to be talking to them. We're not going to be having any conversations. They're just sitting here. And they said, you know what? If we're going to come in and finally sit in to watch you guys do a pod, we want it to be the temp.
They did say that. They also said for the live streamers that they insisted on sitting behind the laptop that's streaming.
Yeah,
this.
So live streamers, don't be looking for any of those two.
Yeah, they're not there. You can feel the presence, but they're not there.
And you should be happy that they're not on camera because those two guys are gorgeous.
Oh, my God.
You couldn't take your eyes off that eye candy.
I can't. See, I keep looking over there. Look at that. I don't know which one's more beautiful. Listen, this is, like Paul said, the episode about the temp in the season of the Yuppie Nightmares. I'm Matt Gourley.
And I am Paul Rust. This is the Yuppie Nightmares.
That's right. And this is with Gourley and Rust, the podcast where we go on at length in a cozy, easy listening fashion with the movies that thrill us, chill us, and spill us our guts. You can get more on patreon.com/withgourleyandrust feature-length film commentaries. Yeah. We just did a Psycho commentary that's dual immersion. We watched both versions of Psycho at the same time.
Yeah, the 1960 and the 1998 version at the same time, which if you add that, I'm just thinking that right now, is what, 60 plus 98?
158, yeah.
Divided by two.
Uh-huh.
That's how much entertainment we provide.
That's right, which reminds us we're going to be doing the number 23, which is all about numerology at some point on this podcast.
It was based on a lot of our theories, Matt, about the number.
Listen, if you subscribe to that Patreon at the Baby Xenomorph level, you can watch these recordings on a video live stream, as many people are right now, as well as have your name read out on the podcast by emailing us at withgourleyandrust@gmail.com. We'll do that at the end of this episode.
Fun.
But that being said, who cares about the rest? We're here to talk about the temp.
That's right. You know, when you said the number 23, you got me thinking about Jordan, Michael Jordan, the number 23.
That's right.
And then it made me think of the temp. This kid, like any early 90s son in the movie, loves the NBA.
Basketball
loves
fiend.
Basketball.
The Chicago Bulls. The Atlantic Hawks.
And to my final point, I do have a story about me around that age, around that time, going to an NBA game.
Seriously.
That I don't think I've ever shared on the pod before, but I was like...
In Iowa?
When I lived in Iowa, when I was like a boy.
Yeah.
But then I went to Chicago. Now, I think it'll be better when we get to the part in the scene where the dad takes the boy to the basketball game. Then it just organically
comes up. Okay, so this is just a teaser. I love it.
And I hope I'm building it up.
You are.
Yeah, so that it's the funniest story you've ever heard.
I don't even want to talk about the movie now. I want to get to this basketball story.
Yeah, well, I won't forget, I don't think.
Well, speaking of the movie, you hadn't seen this movie?
I had seen the first 40 minutes.
The front nine.
Yeah, the front nine, and I don't know if it was, I actually had seen the whole movie, and it was so forgettable. Mm-hmm. Or if I had watched it before, but by the end I was like, I didn't know the twist.
Me either.
So I was like, I never
saw
the movie.
Didn't know the twist.
I would say, out of all the Yuppie Nightmares we watched, the most baffling.
Yes.
Like, guest window, or what was the bedroom window?
Yeah, that's that right. That was, we called that very weird.
But this is baffling.
Boy, you put it right. Starting just right out of the gate that this movie, this whole Yuppie Nightmare, this taut sort of erotic thriller, all swings around working at a cookie factory.
Isn't that so funny?
I kept flashing in on that going, wait, they're asking us to take this thing seriously because it's taking place at a cookie company?
I was reflecting on the cookie company aspect of this movie, Matt, thinking about it and thinking how it is a little, what would you say, symbol of how this movie is cooked wrong.
Right.
Which is like...
Underbaked.
Baked. Yeah, baked wrong. Which is like... So initially it started as this kind of like dark comedy thriller, right? As originally written. And then it sort of, as time went on, it got redeveloped, recut, re-edited, reshot.
Tom Holland. It seems to me equal parts original state of kind of campy satirical thriller to... earnest genre movie and then studio meddling, almost like three equal parts. That's why it seems so baffling.
Yes, that's, I think, is why it's baffling. It's like the one cook is the original writers, the other cook is Tom Holland, the a guy who wrote it, didn't get credit, but is the director and probably rewrote stuff. And then studio meddling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reshoots and such.
Reshoots. Yeah. And like, you could tell probably Timothy Hutton's character was a little bit more of a dick or something in original. He just got so sanded down where he was like, there's nothing this guy's done wrong. What?
I know. They set him up as they literally call him Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes.
Mr. Hyde, and that he is. You don't know that that's paranoia. In the beginning, when he's talking to his therapist, you think, like, is he a domestic abuser? What is this?
Right. And, like, if it was Michael Douglas, I think they'd be willing to kind of go places where you're like, oh, he does sleep with her.
Yes.
You know? Or, or he does sleep with his wife again and tell her he's with her for sure, and then has kind of like a dalliance with her, or kisses her, and then you're like, oh, this guy, he's got some scuffs. He was just like, it was so Blando Calrissian.
It was Blando Calrissian, and it started so strong because you do think, I'm assuming that this temp is the antagonist of the movie, but we're going to have a complicated protagonist.
Yes.
So this will be interesting, and it's not going to be black and white. It'll be shades of gray.
But it's like,
they neuter all that.
Yeah, they do, because you don't even get to see what's going on with her. You know, like, they hand the rocks to Cradle, which is so dope. Remember, you get like 20 minutes to find out why that nanny wants to come in and destroy things and fuck things up, because, you know, she had that cockamamie thing with her husband, like, her child was lost by the, and so now she wants revenge. But knowing just what's kind of like going on in her mind, I know that they have to make it so that he's paranoid. You can't figure out too much what's going on her end, but like, there ain't one scene of her where she's not with Timothy Hutton. You don't like Fatal Attraction. You get some good stuff where you kind of like, I know what Glenn Close is like when she's by herself.
What is her motivation in this? Is it just she just thankless jobs and trying?
Yeah, I think the movie didn't click to me until like the last 15 minutes when she was like, after that cockamamie cuckoo brakes cutting sequence, I was like, and she was like, look, at all these points, it could have been me, but it wasn't. I'm on your side. Can't you see that? I was like, oh, they're doing like this the Hitchcock movie Suspicion thing, where it's like this woman doesn't know if Cary Grant is really trying to kill her or not.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's what the temp is?
Yeah.
The temp is, and I was like, this took too long for me to, like,
I know.
I wanted it to be a juicy Hand the Rocks to Cradle in the office.
Yeah, because there was moments in the movie where you're thinking, they're trying to string you along as to whether or not she's really doing this. Then they're stringing you along as to whether or not he's really paranoid and this is even happening. Then come to find, I had to look at Brantley's notes. I mean, I could go off the twist ending reveal or lack of reveal to realize they were intending Faye Dunaway's character to be a red herring. But reading Brantley's notes, that was the intention all along, but apparently Faye Dunaway would not allow herself to be portrayed unfavorably in the shots. So other than the table read, she played her as likable and nice and kind of admirable the entire time, undercutting what I think was an intention of the movie. So no one was playing on the same team for this thing.
You're right.
You could tell.
Nobody was, what is it? It was like that story of the elephant with the blind guys, and everybody's describing different parts of the elephant that they're touching. They don't know.
Mm.
Right? You know, that
fable,
that parable. Yeah. Like, everybody thought they were making a different movie or something. Yeah. So it brings me back to that cookie company thing, which is like
insane.
I could see us in a dark comedy.
Yeah.
We're playing with camp sort of movie.
Absolutely.
I get it then. Yeah. It's like, oh, these people are putting such, it's funny that they're putting such high stakes and all this like political office backstabbing and stuff is all being done over cookies.
Right.
Is funny. But then once you go, what you were saying, trying to do a sincere thriller, like, Well, automatically, that's stupid then. That just doesn't make sense. So you just got to change the cookie stuff now. You got to make it about business.
Yeah, it has to be stocks, bonds, amalgamations.
What Working Girl's about.
Yeah. Or even bad influence, because they were like money markets or whatever. I don't even remember. But
Yeah.
You shouldn't even know what it is. It should be some kind of financial jargon that, you know, real estate or something.
Right. So all this stuff of like the intensity of the guy, that one guy who's always like screaming, going crazy, like you're like, oh, that'd be funny if like I knew that this was ridiculous.
Dwight Schultz, howling mad Murdoch from the A-Team.
He was howling mad the corporate guy in this.
I'm so curious about him because he came up, my friend James and I, we were talking about the movie Fat Man and Little Boy, which I've never seen, but it was kind of an Oppenheimer story as well. Yeah. Paul Newman, Dwight Schultz. He was so good on the A-Team. What happened to this guy? Why didn't he ascend? I think maybe he is a little cuckoo or something. Man. I think he's pretty fringy too. I don't know, but I always wished you'd see more of him because I always liked him as an actor.
Yeah, what else has he been in outside of...
Those three things, I couldn't tell you.
Oh my God. He does have... I love his eyes.
Yeah.
Love that guy. I want to know what's going on behind his eyes.
Yeah.
The only thing I could think of with the cookie stuff that like... It's I don't think a metaphor is the right word. It's like a one-to-one or something. Like, it did seem to be, you could think of it as like it's about movie studio politicking. Like, there was a point where she said, like, we're making cookies. We're not building bombs or whatever, which is like, you know, what people say in the entertainment industry of like, why are we getting so bent up with office politics and backstabbing and stuff when we're just... doing,
which is fitting because according to the notes, and I read this online as well, that there was a regime change at Paramount. It was Paramount, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Tom Holland seems to have considered the idea, or even thought, speaking of paranoia, that the new regime actually wanted to tank this movie because it was the pet project of the old regime. But that seems ridiculous to me because ultimately those profit margins are going to fall on their, you know, watch. And
how I viewed this movie is this is how Tom Holland views the world.
Yeah.
Like everyone in every scene, including like guys who are like running the shop where Timothy Hutton goes and buys like gum, everybody has like an inner, what's that called when you got
angst, distrust,
a motive that's, everybody's got their own little, they're at something that like, and like that scene where Steven Weber and Timothy Hutton are playing basketball and he just openly shoves Timothy Hutton and then Timothy Hutton falls and gets up and he gets in his face. I was like, in interviews I've read it, listened to with Tom Holland, he's done podcast interviews. The ones I've listened to his commentaries. I love his brain. I think he writes really good stuff, and I like a lot of his movies. But he's a prick, man.
Oh, it seems like.
And I was like, when I saw that basketball scene between two guys, he shoved him, and I was like, why is he doing that? But then why is he getting back up in that guy's face? Yeah. And I was like, oh, I think this is how. This is how this man experiences his world.
I think you're right. And I think he maybe thinks it's even somewhat normal. And
there was a very telling line, which was like, in the 80s, we used to stab each other in the back. Now we do it with a smile. I was just listening to Dabney Coleman talked about Richard Franklin with Cloak and Dagger. Because, you know, Richard Franklin, director of Psycho 2, and who worked with Tom Holland.
Well, you're just listening to what?
I was reading an interview where Dabney Coleman was talking about Richard Franklin. He was like, oh, he's like one of the biggest pricks I ever worked with.
Coming from Dabney Coleman, I assume that's saying something. I'm not saying Dabney Coleman probably isn't a prick, but he just plays a prick.
Who knows, I think you're probably right. So he maybe can see him, you know?
Yeah.
But he said Richard Franklin was a huge prick. Now, Meg Tilly said Anthony Perkins was one of the most difficult actors she worked with. Mick Garris, when he worked with Anthony Perkins on Psycho 4, was like hands down the most difficult actor I worked with.
Really? Just in like just mean?
Yeah, probably. Well, I think it'd be difficult, like, giving direction to somebody who's played Norman Bates for like 30 years, you know, you know, but, and maybe isn't entirely happy that he's in Psycho 4, the beginning, you know.
Right.
I think also he'd found out he was HIV positive around that time, but people didn't know. Yeah. But I was thinking that set of Psycho 2 with Richard Franklin, Tom Holland, and like all these guys, I love their work, but they just sound like straight up bastards.
Yeah.
And maybe the most telling thing with the temp is, like, it did seem to be in the 80s. The understanding was like, and I'm not wagging my finger at this or whatever. It was just like assumed like people were pricks.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is generalizing, but just even as a metaphor, the cocaine fueled inhibitions probably were a lot more direct, where 90s was a self-correction that became a little bit more passive aggressive, and the world politically was a little calmer,
kinder and gentler.
The Cold War is over. Terrorism hasn't really begun, you know, at least like, you know.
No, yeah.
There's the Irish.
Whatever, the modern
version.
Yeah.
There probably is a sort of like, no, we're all good, right?
Well, you mentioned the Cold War thing. When they were talking about this office politics and they were trying, you could tell, like, the script was written in 1989. Mm. So it's like right after Fatal Attraction and Working Girl. And they just like put them together.
Clearly. No kidding.
And I was like, this feels like a post-Cold War spy movie. They're hung up on all these, like, the Japanese investors are coming. I was like, I can see how that was a preoccupation in 89, but not this.
No, you're right. There's computer,
Malice.
There's grabbing documents. So who can you trust?
Yeah.
It's your neighbor. It's your friend. It's your temp. Oh, my God.
But just, like, we're... Also, the idea of like,
now you couldn't
make a spy movie past that time because the Cold War is ended. You can't really kind of make this like office, and they're trying to do whatever was happening in that time, like the touchy feely, like, workaholic dad's gonna have to put things aside. I thought of something. What bothers me about the can the workaholic put work aside and be there for the family thing?
Yeah.
I had clarity on this. I was like, I know why it annoys me.
Please give it to me.
In the movies, it's assumed it's a choice.
Uh-huh.
To be able to go, God, I'm choosing to work more and not be with my family. I think for most people, if you want to click into it, it's like, I have a job. I got to go to that job to earn money.
It's complicated for sure.
Yeah. I just don't think it's like, it feels very Hollywood to be like, I'm doing the work because I love the work.
Right. More than my family.
Yes. Yeah. And how do I set aside my drive and ambition? For most people, I think it's just like, I got to go to this job, and then the job spills over into life. And I mean, certainly there's people who go like, I want it all. How can I have it all? And then also have my family. But it just comes from like automatically like a materialist place that isn't, if you want to tell that story about like, I got to work. Somebody has to work two jobs and put their kids through school and they don't get to have schedules together. The idea of like, I got the choice between going to the meeting or going to the kids' basketball game.
I don't think there's any version of that that isn't complicated by even other factors in terms of being angry at work because they want to be with their family, but you have to work.
Right.
Or there's the version of the like father or mother that is escaping the family. It's not even that they like work. They're escaping the family. And I'm not like, that's obviously not a good thing, but there's that version.
And I'm
too.
Sure you feel the split sometimes where it'll be like, when you're working, you're like, I should be with my family.
Yeah.
And then when you're with your family, you're like, there's stuff that has to be done.
It's
like,
I struggle with
that's what I think is the dilemma between work. And it's not whatever Peter Banning was going through in Hook, where it's like, hey, go out, sorry.
No, you're right. Yeah. It's like, it's not grass is always greener. It's like the grass is always browner. You're at one thinking you should be at the other. Yeah. And that's something I struggle with, and I hate it. I hate it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm fairly decent at making the choice, the right choice at, you know, at the right circumstance at the right time, but it's still a wrestle in my head, which means you're also not present at whatever thing you've chosen to do at that moment. And it's, I hate it
yeah.
so much. It's I know, one it's, of my biggest struggles. I'm getting
you,
better at it now.
I hear you.
But
I know.
It takes like presence of mind for me to work through it. The thing that makes it easier is Glenn. Like, she brings me out of it, thank God. But not always, and mm-hmm. and then you feel guilty, and like, mm-hmm. but then you also have responsibilities, and mm-hmm. yeah, like you're saying, it's fraught. It's not just some dude that's like, I'm gonna make some cookies, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're a human being that's not an absolute psychopath, and you have a child, there's very little that can rival your affection for the child.
Yeah, it's not nuanced,
in a sustained
right.
way that yes. you like. I mean, I guess, I don't know.
Well, it's also probably a hard thing to show in a 2-hour movie, the idea of like parenting or whatever you would consider not working at your job and
yeah.
family life, like that's difficulties, struggles, it's hard to be a parent, whatever, you know, platitudes you want to know.
Yeah.
But that, like, the joys are so big and then so worth it. That's just not cinematic.
No,
so they have to, like, dial it down to, like, got to get to the baseball game or not. Like,
I know, it's such always a weird, that. It's yeah. either a play or a sports yeah. game. You choose that on one side or the cookie factory on the other yes. side, which honestly, just take your kid to work and that's a win-win.
Oh my God. Just get him interning there. Everybody will be happy.
I want to get back to something you said about the set of Psycho 2, and you just set my mind reeling thinking of those three personalities. And I feel like you of all people should write a screenplay about. And I realize I sound like,
the set of Psycho
like my parents going,
Why don't
you make a movie about that? You should do that.
Well, there was that movie Hitchcock that was about how like Psycho was stewed up by a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah.
So
just thinking your take on those three people almost as a play, you know, it should be a play.
That's good, dude. Yeah, like the shark is working, but
yes,
the
exactly.
Set,
and you
yeah.
have the Meg Tilly character as the kind of like ballast of sanity.
That's good. And like old versus new, and yeah that's good, dude. I was thinking not anything about writing something, but when you said about how being on that set and just like, okay, something probably happened, it happens in every workplace, not just on sets, you can have three people, one's a dick, two aren't a dick, or none are dick. You could have all three are a dick. And then what happens is the dick butane like starts getting turned up because everybody starts like, who's the bigger?
That's right.
And then it becomes like an arms race.
It becomes a dick measuring contest.
Yeah. And then, because there's times I'll listen to interviews with like Ivan Reitman and he comes off as such an asshole.
Does he?
And I met Ivan Reitman in passing. He seemed like an okay guy.
Uh-huh.
But his attitude is so like calcified 80s. Like, yeah. I had to go up against this studio person and tell them Bill Murray and these assholes. Like, they're just all kind of like crustled with this
right.
old shit. It makes me think of... but the idea of like, if you're a little bit of a dick and then somebody comes over, you got to kind of like... cook it up, and then those three people go off to another movie.
Oh,
like
right.
Dick Pollen.
Yeah.
Now Richard Franklin goes to another movie. He's a dick in front of Henry Thomas. Who knows? Henry Thomas now has a little right. bit of dick in him.
Dick Pollen.
Yeah, the Dick Pollen.
It's a Dick Pollen production.
produced by Dick Pollen. Yeah. Uh-huh. And but it reminds. Do you like Fiona Apple, Matt?
Yeah.
Her most recent album
right.
has that song Relay, where it's like, evil is a relay sport, where the one who's burned turns to pass the torch. Evil is so real. Like, that's good, man. I mean, it's true.
It's as tale as old as time. Jason goes to hell. Whatever Friday the 13th.
That buttworm was the torch of evil that was being passed.
It follows Nightmare. Whatever Nightmare did that trick.
But I like the idea that Halloween somebody can be in a situation where they got burnt by the torch of evil. But then they go on to their next thing and they don't pass it on. Right. That's like kind of the coolest thing you can
That's the maybe testament do in life. To yeah. any parent that doesn't revisit their parents' transgressions, no matter how big or small, or at least mitigates them and makes them smaller so that the returns are less and less and that each generation hopefully gets better and better. It's hard to see that in this larger world right now where things are getting batshit crazy. Mm. But you do hope, like, the bigger wave form is that people are getting more tolerant and things like that.
I know. Looking back on my family's generations, I would say, on average, going back four generations, I think I can go back to three, four, two bad things kind of slough off. Per generation. Yeah. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, spanking is ending with my generation. Yeah, I'm not going to spank my child.
And I know my grandma had worse stuff experience than whatever she, you know, like,
yeah.
It does seem like when my stomach might start getting old, is when there's like two generations, not with my family. I just mean universally.
Yeah.
There's like two generations where it's like, that's actually where I take kind of peace in, man. I go like, I don't think in two generations people would be like, we spank kids now, and that is cool, right?
Yeah, I hope
like,
not.
You can't even maybe put that politically. It's just like, culturally, I think we're all kind of like, nobody would be like, the majority opinion is...
Hit your child.
Hit your kid.
Yeah.
And so that kind of like, you're like, all right, that feels... good that
yeah
it's we won't probably ever in. Slide back to that
yeah hope so.
I mean this is really dark but when COVID happened that's like what was so sad to me like with the lockdown I was like people who need to get out of their house to go to school so that the teachers can see them and go your home life is I was like
and not only that but the home life the abuses are compounded because of the close proximity and all the time. Oh God. Let's get back to the temp. It's own type of travesty.
I mean, everybody now is always like, weren't the 90s so great? And you do think like, that in 1993 or whatever, there was a movie about a cookie company. And
one of the notes is way more about cookies than I would have thought.
Well, let's look at the temp as like a cookie.
Well, another way to look at it is I actually think one of the strongest moments of this film was her introduction where she just takes over and helps him get that report done. And it ends with him, her handing him off into an elevator handoff. He slides it down the hallway to the secretary who passes it to Charlene. That whole thing felt like Tom Holland should be directing like Tandy computer ads or Apple computer ads or something.
Yeah.
Like that felt like a commercial. It was tight. Yeah. It was jaunty, like dynamic. Yeah. If the whole movie was like that, it would have been really fun. And there was part of watching this movie that I had a lot of fun, but it was because I was watching something baffling and trying to solve the riddle. Turns out there's no answer to this other than it was a mess, but it was still fun.
No, the what you're saying about how it like to be in an office and it feels like that was like probably my favorite aspect of this movie is like no matter where they would go, I liked the setting. So if he was like in his office, it looked slick and all glassy and had beautiful little early 90s cinematography like sunbeam.
And the way that it was being redesigned as the movie went on too was an interesting element, kind of, I think, thematic.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was like cool.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of the movie, like, it was coming from this place of things in transition, whether it's like he's working three things with his wife, the building's in transition, she herself is a symbol of, or is the person you have come in when there's transition, she's the temp. But then even that, or absence and like what, like that story she told about Cut Day, where she went off to the lake with her class and they had sex in the lake or something like that. But I was like, we're making a choice that it's Cut Day at school. Yeah. And it wasn't just me and my friends would go to the lake. Like, the idea of there's time for work and when do you go and do something else? Because, like, she got in because a guy had to go, like, oh, my wife's going to have a baby. Right? So, like, the...
How did she engineer that hand shredding? Because we're sure she did.
I don't know. And that's when I was like, uh-oh, with this movie. Because I agree. I think the first 20 minutes felt kind of like, I was like, ooh. Yeah. And I was going to say all the settings were good, whether it was office or him going to a fucking Portland suburban home leaves. And I loved anywhere they went.
It was working awesome. In his garden, heaven.
Yes. But the hand thing. Which, by the way, I was hoping it was going to turn into like the hand sequel.
But it's a bunch of little chunks of hand.
Yeah. And the story runs like in parallel with this temp story. So you also cut to like these like gremlin hands.
Well, speaking of that, there is a possible universe building here because it's really easy to think of Steven Weber's character. He just moves to New York after this and starts dating. What's her name? I forget her character's name.
Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, but what's... I forget her character's name.
Alice.
Who knows?
Well, this did feel like... Because we did watch Single White Female right before this. Yeah. In case you guys are just listening to that out of order. I don't know.
We don't know what
it is
crazy
kind of a perfect
do.
Bridge between Single White Female and Disclosure is the temp.
I haven't seen Disclosure. I don't think so. I'm curious to see what that is.
But like Single White Female, it's like she comes to the city.
Oh, yeah.
She enters the office place. This is like the job at the workplace, and then Disclosure is then like office, but with married people having affairs.
Right.
But also like the same studio. It was supposed to come out December 92. The temp released by Paramount. That would have been 4 to 5 months after they had released. No, that was another studio. But it's just the same, like 5-6 months after Single White Female.
This is 93, right?
February 93, I think. And it was because of reshoots the month before.
And they finished it like 4 days before it was out, something like that.
Yeah. So it was like the movie was still wet. Coming through the projector.
From underwater sex.
Oh, when she was like, the big come on was her being like, when he was in the inner tube in the lake, that she was like, wouldn't it be great to have underwater sex in a cold, smelly lake with our coworkers nearby? I was like, five details that are so gross and not sexy.
A bacteria-laden lake. Also, the way she phrases is like people didn't know. But my understanding of sex is you have to be coupled in some way, whether it's front to back or back to front.
I mean, what I imagine was...
You're still
going to
see two people very close and very...
Enmeshed
in movement, you know?
Enmeshed in movement.
Even if you didn't think you were having sex, you'd still look at those people in the water and go, there's something going on there.
Well, and then when she said, why don't we do that? I'm like, your classmates looking over at you and seeing you guys maybe like at best being like they're hugging for a long time. You couldn't do that at work. You couldn't like look at two coworkers and be like, they're just hugging for... That is inappropriate itself too. So I don't even know... But she was really, they couldn't have even accomplished the weird thing that her and her boyfriend did, which I imagine it as like, she's on the tube, he's behind her, but like that she, means like underwater, like two fish having sex or two turtles or something. Like he's putting his penis... the shark term? What's the thing I hate?
Oh, the claspers?
Claspers open, and then it's so gross. What she was proposing. Also, where that fell on the line of what the fuck is happening? Like, at no point in the movie, I guess it's probably victim of, like, because they want to make it, he's paranoid, so they can't ever clearly say what she's up to or what's happening. But that just means there's so many scenes in a row where I'm like, they're fighting now? Wait, they're getting along? Wait, now he's suspecting her? She's suspecting him? It was just...
Yeah, when I read that, also that Faye Dunaway was supposed to be a red herring the whole time, it wasn't until they don't show you who hits him at the end that I was like, oh, is the twist she's the killer? Because there really was no sense of that whatsoever.
No,
she was an ally and a reasonable woman.
And I guess it was because she wanted to... I mean, I could see it as like, then that's a good red herring that you're not tipping your hand and playing it. But then you have to layer details of the performances so you can go back and be like, oh, I saw...
Right. It gets into that shattered territory where there are so many outcomes possible that the twist falls flat because you're like, well, it could have been any of these... And then also reading that Faye Dunaway, you know, insisted on her own cameraman and didn't get it, but then still tried to control the director of photography.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
I mean...
when a movie's like this wasted, that's when I want to just go, well, let's let this be an exercise about watching Faye Dunaway cook and let me be on set. And
watch
this, you know, actress of another era... do her diva thing, because at least we'll get entertained with that. Just give me a movie of her doing that, you know?
Yeah, well, and when you cast her as like the twist villain at the end, who's going to be like raising her hand and stuff, like you're automatically putting yourself in the camp.
Yeah.
Upper decks of Mommy Dearest, of like her being a wild eyed psychopath.
Yeah.
And like, if your movie ends with Faye Dunaway being like the killer psychopath, you have to accept you're a campy movie that takes place at a cookie company where Faye Dunaway is like the femme fatale or whatever. Yeah.
But then to undo that, and then we haven't even talked about the ending, which is the craziest, most unsatisfying ending. It's just a really mild conversation of, guess what? I found you out and you're fired. Blackout. But not even Donald Trump, you're fired. Just you're fired. Oh, okay. She doesn't go to jail for murder? Did she kill these people?
Laurie, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I
mean, he's calling security, but then after that, it's like, you're fired. Well, we figured.
Yo, so what was the original?
The ending? Oh, did you read that the original ending was? They were going to have a three-way fight between Charlene, Chris, and Peter, and Laura Flynn Boyle was going to lose her arm in a cookie, like cookie razor machine, and then die that way. But I thought for sure she had to die some violent death, because it's the crazy thing is they never confirm whether she's killed these people or not.
Yeah.
But it has to be, because there's also the reveal of all the, like, you know, quote unquote Chekhov's this and Chekhov's that. There's a letter opener. There's a wasp. There's all these things that you're like, the minute you see him, you're noting like, well, this, here we go. Here we go.
If Oliver Platt didn't die of a wasp in this movie, I would just be like, it's as baffling as anything else. Like,
yeah, because what did we watch not too long ago where we're kind of like, how did this person not die of this thing that they clearly set them up to die?
Yeah,
of?
Right. At least it had that like competency. That.
Yeah.
I wondered too if your fax machine reveal that you posed last episode of, like, wasn't there a movie we watched where a fax is coming out and there's suspense with it? Scream 3 has a "we're waiting for the faxes" to come out.
And there's, it's also I Clear and Present Danger has that.
Yes, you mentioned that. That's right.
Yeah.
The allergy, I died of bug allergies, will never be the Sleepaway Camp bathroom stall bee death. Like, when I saw that in the temp, I was like, have you seen Sleepaway Camp?
What are you doing?
Why even try?
I think it's doing a Madonna thing where it's like, most of the world hasn't seen this, so let's just steal it.
I see. Yes, yes. Hey, who invented sex anyway? I think it was Madonna. Do you remember that from the other sister?
No. Oh, I do now that you say that. I own that
the
movie.
The line at the end of the trailer was like, who invented sex anyway? I think it was Madonna. Oh, yes! America loved that movie for that joke! No, bad, bad, bad. We look back on that, we go, no, no, no!
I just realized we've been doing this whole video stream in absolute silhouette, but it kind of is cool. It's kind of cozy.
Kind of got a Gordon Willis.
We won't do this. Oh,
hey,
look, I got it refocused. Maybe you like it. We'll just see. If you don't like it, I'll lean back in and we'll get a new exposure. But
the question, though, that we didn't go back to, which is of the mangled hand thing, yeah, and whether, because that was so crazy that it was like, I don't think you're supposed to think maybe she was behind it, but then when you think about it for like 10 seconds, you're like, how? And then you're like, so if that wasn't, and she got into that job by accident and happenstance,
it can't be happenstance, because then,
well, then who cares?
Like, Oliver Platt dies of I know it's not this, but eating a wasp. And then the Robert hangs himself because of corporate failure or potential corporate failure. These three things happening. I can't. What is the Fleming quote is, once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. Yeah.
All right. That's how we would have felt if there was three towers.
That's right.
It is weird then, because it's like, well, if it was her, then that was weird how she pulled it off. And if it wasn't her, then it was just kind of an unrelated accident that went along with her two murders of Oliver Platt and the other guy. You know what I mean?
Like, well, she also very clearly tries to murder Charlene and Peter later. So
right. It
had to be her. She tried to kill or killed five people.
And
so she's fired. Then she's just fired.
I mean, part of what's baffling about this, I would say, is that mixture of tones, which was like when the scene started and it kind of had like, you know, Tom Holland directed Child's Play. Yeah. Like when the camera started pushing in on a low angle on the copy machine, I was like, this feels like a little Chucky sequence. And then when it got all bloody and crazy, I was like, this isn't Fatal Attraction, or this is like,
it felt like AI had made this movie. Yeah. And then there's those weird fade outs too.
Yeah. It does feel like AI, where they had a bunch of different pieces, and then there's sometimes you just have to fade it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that ending too was baffling with his family, where the dad was like, they just show three lines with him and his family where they go, Nathan had a question for you. Can you come to my me?
Well, sorry, I gotta go to New York. You know what? I'll come to you. Dip.
But when she, it was after the big Faye Dunaway, like all this crazy denouement, whatever. And then it goes to the husband, wife, and the kid walking along. And she goes, hey, Nathan has a question he'd like to ask you. I thought the kid was going to be like, what the fuck did I just watch? What was it?
Can you explain this movie and or your motivations? Are you healed? Why is mommy so sad as to come back to you and then leave and then come back?
Was she the one who had the threesome that he walked in on, or what was it?
It wasn't a threesome. He thought it was a threesome, but it was just, she was just having a dinner at her boss's house, and the boss's wife was there. Their kids were there. So it was proof that he's just purely paranoid that she's going to cheat on him.
He doesn't like that word.
No.
Yeah.
But she was a kind of it was like a pathetic character in that she just kept, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but not with any like examination, really.
Yes, right.
She kept going back and forth the same way that
the plot required.
Yeah, it was.
No, sorry. What?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, when he would be interested in her, when that would be going on, I didn't know what. like, what are they fighting for?
And she showed up at his house. I was like, I don't know who this is for a while. And then realized, oh, that's his ex-husband. His estranged. It was funny that Chris kept calling, "You're estranged," called.
Yes. Tried at all possibilities to get the little crowbar in there.
Yeah.
Now, Maura Tierney, is she daughter of Lawrence?
Is she?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
So that means we got two actors in this movie. Lara Flynn Boyle, who I thought was the daughter of Peter Boyle.
Right.
And Maura Tierney, who's not the daughter of Lawrence Tierney? Jesus Christ.
I can help you out. Timothy Hutton is the son of whoever Hutton, who is an actor.
Lauren Hutton?
No. I forget, but his father is a kind of charismatic actor of the earlier generation.
Well, with each actor we just talked about, right? Do you want to take a peek? We could take a peek break.
Sure. Oliver Platt isn't the son of Edward Platt, chief from Get Smart, is he?
Wait, the actor's name is Edward Platt?
Yeah.
Oh, let's check. Maybe he's...
I will.
You don't think he's related to North Platt?
Who's North Platt? Or what's North Platt?
I think that was a city? Or maybe Platt, North Dakota? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Boy.
Is Faye Dunaway not related to masculine, not finished at home?
Very well done.
Said on this podcast before. I would like to apologize to you and yours this holiday season.
I love it.
We'll be right back.
With Corley and Rust.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say, as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
Nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
With Corley and Rust.
Timothy Hutton's father played Ellery Queen, and Oliver Platt's father was a diplomat.
Yes, and when you said that, we came up with a sort of a...
Not we, this is all you. And this is me,
Gilbert
hats off
Sullivan,
to you.
Kind of.
No, oh yeah.
Hello, my name is Oliver Platt, and I am the son of a diplomat.
Man, there could be more lyrics. I'll figure it out.
My name is Tim Hutton, if you know what I mean, and I be the son of an Ellery Queen.
There we go.
One thing about this movie, sometimes we watch a movie that's little batshit like this, and it's kind of frustrating and angry. This one actually left me disappointed because I was excited to watch this movie. Mm-hmm. I think all the actors in it are really good, even if they're not great in this movie, with the exception maybe of Laura Flynn Boyle. I think she's pretty good.
Yeah.
The other ones,
I know. That's what I wanted to get back to, is the actor talk with this, because like, I will watch Faye Dunaway in anything. Yeah. Like, a movie could kind of be made just because I get to see a Faye Dunaway performance. So yeah. I love her. Oliver Platt is like,
I love him,
top shelf. And so when he just pops up for three scenes in this movie, you're so grateful.
Yeah.
Especially, has he ever played like a non-heel? Has he ever played like the...
In The Bear, he's kind of a like... anti-hero patriarch. But he has in something else. But you're right, he usually plays...
But does he ever play like a sweetie, like...
He should.
The nice dad.
Yeah, he should more, because I see him that way.
My friend had the observation, my friend Chris Stengel, he had the observation that Pretty in Pink works because Harry Dean Stanton usually plays louses, so when you play him playing like a sweet dad, your brain does something. You actually
have the same theory about Red Dawn.
The dad's in that?
Harry Dean Stanton.
When he screams, avenge me.
Avenge me.
But the,
you're right about Oliver Platt, and I feel that way about Alfred Molina too, that imagine if you could just hang out with Oliver Platt and Alfred Molina.
That's what's great about, Big Night and The Imposters, those movies that, Oliver Platt and Stanley Tucci did together, because they write for themselves and they're really funny and stuff.
They write for themselves? Oliver Platt writes for himself?
I could be wrong, but I feel like Big Night was... written with all those actors in mind, and The Imposters. But
they did. It was written for them, or they wrote their own.
I think Stanley Tucci co-wrote it, I think, but maybe Oliver Platt.
Oh, that's nice.
I could be totally wrong on all this. Too bad
there's not a thing called the Ararat
that we go look this up.
But did you feel like Faye Dunaway was any good in this? She's.
What
if that means, though, that she needs to be given her own DP and her own, all the demands that she had for this? That's what means she's good at
it. That's odd. Well, well, I'll get to, because, you know, people know her as kind of a
kook.
Yeah. But I think Laura Flynn Boyle also has a reputation. Yeah. So that scene where Laura Flynn Boyle, like, smashes the bug on the boarding table, and Faye Dunaway looks at her with crazy eyes, and Lara Flynn Boyle looks at her with crazy eyes, is like game recognizing game. That took on a meta quality that I thought was like pretty
maybe
awesome.
Or that just happened by accident, and they're like, let's work this into the script. Did you see the game recognize game there? And Lara Flynn Boyle just slapped a wasp.
And yes, finally, Lara Flynn Boyle is probably the best in this.
Yeah.
I think she's kind of like perfectly cast, because I was thinking about it, and all the roles she plays, I think it's usually, it's about some dangerous mystique.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to have that character be like, you can never pin her down. Like I really like Lara Flynn Boyle as an actor, and when she's
too
on screen, it's...
I think I remember, I must have seen this when it came out, because I was pretty bewitched by her as a young man.
Well, and then she's so funny in Wayne's World as Stacy.
I don't even remember her in that. Although, for some reason, I remember her very well in the movie Mobsters with Patrick Dempsey. Who else isn't that? Richard Grieco?
Yes, Christian Slater.
Christian Slater and Costas Mandalore.
Damn, we named all four of the mobsters.
And F. Murray Abraham and Anthony Quinn.
That's God. And it's so funny because that's like Young Guns for gangsters.
Exactly
right?
What yeah. it is. And yeah. I can't find it anywhere.
It's real well. Bro, those Disney movies.
Was that Disney?
Whatever that Hollywood Pictures, the Sphinx logo.
Oh, yeah.
Those grown up Touchstone. I mean, mm-hmm. most of them are fucking shit movies, yeah. but you want to watch them. Like right. scenes from them all.
Yeah.
Those are impossible to find or harder to find than a lot of stuff because they're owned by Disney, but they're not putting them on Disney Plus, but they're not
licensing them out
as frequently because I think they have whatever.
Irony is that that was one of the like 20 films that I dubbed when I had two VCRs. And I,
which one?
Mobsters.
Whoa.
So it was like that, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Miami Blues.
So noir, you were really,
I guess,
you
yeah.
wanted to make sure you,
yeah, I guess so.
Had dubs of, you were like, yeah, I'm a big noir dubber.
I'm kind of the main noir dubber at Lucerna High.
What other stuff do you I don't remember.
There was just a phase whenever I rented something, I would by default copy it. Yep. So it was whatever was rented within that time frame. It wasn't even like a proper selection.
This must have been 90 and 91 because mm-hmm. I would love to look at everybody's dubbed tapes from the rental store because I bet they all come from like a 3-year period because ours was like The Freshman.
Oh yeah, I owned that like a store-bought copy.
Really?
And it's Election, so funny. And The Freshman, yeah.
You had Election as well?
Yeah.
Broderick head over here.
Big one, yeah.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah.
You know, he was supposed to be Walter White originally. That was...
I didn't know that.
That would have been pretty good, huh?
Oh my God.
I was thinking like it's interesting he hasn't done a lot of TV. He's never had like a series tailored around him.
He was really funny in No Hard Feelings.
I haven't seen that, but I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
The mother has the funniest line in that movie.
Do tell.
I can't even remember. I just remember laughing out loud. It's something to do with her checking her son's phone. That I also don't want to spoil it.
You know, so sure.
They're just her delivery is so good.
That's great. The Broderick's Election is probably my favorite. Then he followed that up with You Can Count on Me. And I was like, Broderick is going strong here, buddy. Yeah. So Hutton, I'm a little iffy on. In this movie especially.
Yeah.
But like, I like him in Ordinary People, of course, but like, he's always a little like, it's like what I was complaining about the Fonda stuff. It's kind of like photographs well for the genre.
Yeah.
Like he looks like a drama boy.
Right.
But then like, I don't know. He speaks and there's not like a tonal, like a depth to his voice where I'm like, ooh, just that register makes me want to hang out with this.
I know. I mean, he really had his era. It was this, like,
Taps,
Ordinary People, Turk 182. I guess he worked in Taps because he was kind of like the bland every teen.
And Troubled, I guess he plays Troubled well. And in this, he's like the grown-up version of Troubled. Like,
yeah, he's handsome, he's charismatic, he's likable, but I wouldn't say like super engaging. Right. He doesn't draw me in. He just kind of, I watch him at a distance.
That's why you need a Michael Douglas in one of these roles.
Yeah,
even there's only one in a million.
You like Timothy Dalton probably more than Michael Douglas, but yeah, Timothy. No. Well, you love Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. But, Dalton could have been there.
Oh yeah. That's right.
All those actors, I hear what you're saying. I wanted it to be better because it has such a juicy...
There's a really good movie here somewhere.
Yes. And the haircuts are all great. Like when those boys, when Steven Weber and Timothy Hutton like go to that game together, and they both have these like perfect, fresh out of the salon 90s haircuts. Made me so happy.
Yeah.
So they went to that basketball game. Can I tell you my...
NBA. Oh, yes. Oh, that's right. Okay, good. Because I don't even have anything left to say about this movie, actually.
Yeah. I have a lot. No, oh, I'm kidding. No. No, I don't. I don't at all. So it's so when I saw that boy at the, and you know, hey guys, on the live stream, all caps. If I start telling the story, you're like, you've told this, you son of a bitch.
I don't
bitch.
Recall you telling an NBA basketball
this
story.
This is so mundane. I sorry, Matt. Here we go.
Please.
So when I was in junior high, we went to a, my sister went to DePaul, and so this was the early 90s, and my dad got us a ticket for to see the Chicago Bulls, and so I got to see Jordan play. It was
wow.
Like, and you know, I'm by no means a sporto, man.
But still.
But any kid probably, it's just like a cool thing to see. And we were at a hotel, and I was in the bathroom brushing my teeth or getting ready or something, and I was thinking about how, there was a Saturday morning show called NBA Inside Stuff with Ahmad Rashad hosted it, and it was like after cartoons were done on Saturday morning, they had this NBA Inside Stuff, and it would be like for kids about the NBA, like interviewing NBA stars or probably like a Sports Center Junior, basically, for kids.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if this was true or if they did this or if I just imagined it, but that at basketball games, at professional basketball games, they would have kids say, you're watching NBA Inside Stuff. Like, you know, the camera would be like, you're watching NBA Inside Stuff, right?
Did you get to do this?
So...
You have not told this story before.
Okay, so I'm
on pins and needles.
To answer your question, no.
Okay, wait, you have
the
told
the point
this
of this story is how that did not happen. It was never going to happen.
Still a twist.
It maybe was never even done on the show. I was just fully in fantasy mode. But I was like in the bathroom when we're getting ready to go, and I was like, you know what? I bet there's probably going to be a TV crew there.
You're going to practice?
Oh my gosh. And they're probably going to have kids come up to the camera and say, you're watching NBA Inside Stuff. And of course, they're probably going to pick me. So what am I going to do? Show up and not be rehearsed? I need to. I want to be on camera. I got to do this right, otherwise I won't be on TV. Which is my dream, to be on TV. This is Rusty. This is the cloak. You're gonna be on TV. You gotta be.
This is your thing. It's your moment.
If you blow this, you won't be.
You're just staring at yourself in the mirror, going, "You've got to meet your moment." This is your Dirk Diggler.
Exactly.
Pump up scene.
Exactly. So at probably 12 years of age, I'm looking in the mirror, Matt. And this is where the story ends. I'm just letting you know. The story ends here now.
This is the best.
My family's out in the other part of the in the room. I'm in the bathroom going, looking in the mirror going like, you're trying to look cool. Trying to seem cool. That's like what I'm aiming for. And so I'm going like, you're watching NBA Head Tilt Inside Stuff. Like, oh, maybe I could put up my hand and go like, you're watching NBA. Point with my finger to camera, head tilt, Inside Stuff. I'm going through variations of that, man. Then I get down to the bathroom, like, I'm ready, I'm prepared. And then, of course, we go to the game. It doesn't happen. There's not even a camera crew.
Now you got to do it right now.
I did get to do it. How was it? Did it seem over rehearsed?
That story's up there with yell real loud, and this means pepper for me.
As in the stakes are low in all of
my
book.
I feel the emotional stakes. I feel the desire. I feel the excitement. I feel the disappointment. So did you get disappointed when you realized it wasn't going to happen?
Yeah, I was sitting there and I was just like, what the, why was I get lost in that fantasy? When you're a kid, you just get so swept up. You're like, this is,
absolutely.
Once you conceive it, you're more like, well, this would be insane if this didn't happen now.
I know. And there's, you know, I don't believe in the secret, but I wish I had a little bit more of that ability to daydream again.
Because
I
universe.
There is a, you know, like, I don't believe in cosmic manifestation, but I do believe in that if you really want something, you consciously and subconsciously take steps to make it happen. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but you get closer than you would if you just sit by and do nothing.
Yeah.
So you were putting that energy out there. And if they were walking along
in the bathroom at the embassy suites,
but also in the stands of the stadium. And that's if someone true. Was walking along and they saw young Paul Rust, and they probably would have went, that kid looks rehearsed. Let's go. I bet that kid knows his lines.
Get a boom mic over here. You oh, ready, man. Paul?
Born ready.
Oh man, it makes me one day for your birthday want to like get a film crew and a stadium full of people and bring Jordan in and everybody and have you go. You're watching NBA inside stuff.
Oh, then I choke though. Like I get too nervous. I'm like NBA inside stuff. But I thought I did it well.
You're
and
watching
everybody leaves.
NFL inside. Oh god.
Oh. Did you go to any major? You were in Southern California, so you had some.
My dad is a big sports guy, so I was, let's just say, brought to many sports events, many USC Trojan football games.
Oh, okay.
And then those, like, my dad and I joke about this. Like, I wasn't that son for him, so he would bring me. I had brought G.I. Joes, and I would turn around on my knees and play G.I. Joes on the bench in the stadium while he would watch the game.
Yeah.
With my back to the game.
Yep.
But he did take us to a bunch of 1984 LA Olympics events, and oh, I was cool. really into those, especially soccer. Oh, and then the thing I loved is...
As an 11-year-old, you would have been fucking... That's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to... I was there in that... There was this famous moment where Mary Decker, the track and field runner, was tripped... Where she fell. It was this big controversial moment there at the Coliseum. And I saw that. And I was filming with my little Zapruder Super 8 camera. What? I don't know if I filmed that moment, uh-huh. but I did bring my Super 8 camera and film. But
that'd be awesome if Time came to your house that night. It was like, we'd like to buy that footage. Mr.
The Gorley film.
Yeah.
But we went to soccer, basketball, water
did you
polo.
Ever? Yeah. Did you go to ever like the Lakers? Did you ever see Jack? On the
I don't think so, but at the Forum regularly we would go see the LA Lasers indoor soccer team, which I loved.
That's cool.
And it was like always half full, mm-hmm. the crowd, if that, and those Forum hot dogs were so good. Yeah. And it was indoor soccer, so it was smaller mm-hmm. team, smaller field, way more scores, and
my favorite that. Sporting events to go to if I have to it's just but baseball, because it's the one I understand the rules the most, and I like the meditative state you can almost yeah. like go into in a baseball yeah, game.
I appreciate that.
Like
now.
That, that's nice. And as a kid, I could even hook into it when I was like 10. It just yeah. the even if it's the OCD quality of like these dots have to be filled, this dot has to be filled, and then they move on, and right. then you do the other thing, and you move on. Yeah. Like it was just like something, but. More now than that, outside of the nostalgia qualities, I've been going to my friends Neil and Fran have been taking me and my family to LA Galaxy, Angels, City Angels, the women's soccer.
Oh, nice. Oh, where do they play?
In the stadium downtown. It's
the Staples Center?
The city.
Oh, yeah. Crypto?
Yeah. No, it's an outdoor, no roof soccer field.
Not the Coliseum.
No. But it's near the Coliseum. Oh. But
oh yeah, yeah.
And good lordy, I had such a fun time, and I like That's it great. that the time limits are the actual time limits. Like when
excuse me?
Time limits are actual time oh, limits. Yeah, they're I not know. Fucking lies. Like
NFL?
When I go to a football game, oh, I'm like, God. Great, 10 minutes left. And then I'm like, an hour, I'm like, you lied. Oh,
that's how I would always get my dad on. Like, it says there's 5 minutes left on the clock. It's not going to be that. Well, I want to watch something else, and it would be an hour.
My whole childhood.
Interminable. I know.
I was saying to my wife, Leslie, so glad that we live in a home that we're on Sunday afternoon. There's not this like din of noise.
Background noise
of crowds.
Every weekend and every Monday.
And you can't predict when the sounds are going to happen.
And some man talking like this.
Yes. Every element sucks. And it's happening on a Sunday, which is the worst day. You're like, can't we just watch cartoons until I have to go to bed?
It has come to the point that we've hosted Thanksgiving here a couple of times, and like a brother of mine will say, we'll put on a football game in the living room, and I'm just like, sorry, family time. I can't do it.
It's funny. It's made me hate cable more as like a boomer thing, because we never turn on our cable box anymore. And the only time we do is if like a relative wants to watch a sports game, or if you want to watch, not relatives, but if one wants to watch an award show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's why I have cable?
No.
For award shows and news and like those are the three uncoolest things in the world.
We got rid of it, and we get YouTube TV whenever, like, let's say the Oscars are on or a debate we want to see, and then we'll just immediately cancel it.
I can't do it. I got to say, I get real homesick, though, about as much as I just trashed it. Something I would like around 2014-15 really ground myself in, that I would turn on KTLA at 10 o'clock and it would be showing Seinfeld, and I would take comfort on
knowing that's out there.
Somebody else is watching this exact scene right now, and we have like some umbilical connection there.
Like if there's a James Bond or a Star Wars movie on cable, I will watch it because there's something about it being live in the zeitgeist.
No, and I won't fast forward or pause or jimmy with the timeline, because I want it to be airing at the exact moment that it is for other people as well.
Yeah.
But that's sad that's like the one reason I want to keep my,
Hey man.
But also that it's the one time I ever get like upset about like subsidizing. Like I could give a shit.
Yeah.
But the one time I do is like, you're telling me my tax dollar cable bills go to pay ESPN and Fox News for other people to watch?
Yeah.
When I'm just paying it for the TCM?
You're part of the problem, buddy.
I am. That's why I'm going to take down sports and news 2024. It's a guarantee.
Well, anything else on the temp?
On the temp tiempo. Let me just...
I'll bring up some Zenos while you're looking.
Share some thoughts. Oh, I wanted to say, if you're listening to this on Friday, December 1st, the new Don't Stop World Die album
is out.
Yes. See What the Devil Sees is what it's called.
That's a good title.
See What the Devil Sees.
Ooh.
You can listen to it anywhere. The music is streaming.
Congratulations.
So check that out. Please. And if you're listening to this on December 8th, a week later, hey, it's already there.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this, you know, March 2035. call me up. Ask me how I'm doing. don't. The other stuff I wanted to share. Oh, Timothy Hutton appears on screen while his credit name appears on screen.
I
love it when that happens accidentally in a movie.
Yeah. Because
it feels like a little sitcom, like The Temp starring Timothy Hutton. He looks up from like his computer and like smiles.
But doesn't it bother you that the other people aren't when that happens?
Yes, I know. Because it'll happen sometimes accidentally. Like, it'll come up for two people and then it'll move over. And you're like, that's not Balthazar Getty. when they said oatmeal raisin, I just want to credit where credit's due, Matt.
Yeah.
You don't think about oatmeal raisin cookies as being a good cookie.
No, you don't.
But anytime somebody gives me one, I eat it. I'm like, oh, these rule.
Solid.
Why do I always forget about how good
the
those two flavors
heroes
are?
Heroes of cookies.
They are.
Yeah. Because either one by itself, nothing to write home about.
No,
but the two together.
I mean, I've written home about them before a couple of times.
I never got a response, but.
You love that actor, that character actor who is like the first guy, the red haired dude who's like in that movie Satisfaction with Justine Bateman. And he's
who
also one of the students in Ferris Bueller. He's the guy whose hand gets mangled and
that's
stuff.
That's where I recognize him from, Ferris Bueller.
Yes. Yeah. As one of the bored students. I don't even think he talks. It's just face is great.
Yeah.
And he's doing that thing. You just did it with your mouth. Yeah. Little. Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you see Hughes movies were lining up perfectly with your life? Were you into those? Or?
Oh yeah, big time. Big time. So much so that I didn't even like really project on them. They were just life to me.
Yes.
And Ferris Bueller's, of course. I mean, my favorite of all of them. But yeah, we watched those movies over and over. Speaking of cable, like Breakfast Club was always on cable. Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, Breakfast Club was always on cable. I think Universal has some particular like connection with TV syndication and deals, because you could really sometimes see those movies. Like, and the probably the one most frequently watched for me was Breakfast Club. It's funny, the aforementioned, and Ferris Bueller, the aforementioned Pretty in Pink, I didn't watch until like 2 years ago, because I thought it would be... I heard it was like the mushy one. It wasn't as funny.
I know. My sister watched it, so I saw it a lot. But
and I watched a lot of Some Kind of Wonderful, which is like similar to it. But
there's another one too. What's the like third, you know, quote unquote, like for the girls one of that era? Mm. Some Kind of Wonderful, Pretty in Pink.
She's Having a Baby? No.
No. I don't know.
Oh, but yeah, the I watched it and... Leslie liked Pretty in Pink growing up, my wife. And when we started, she was like, I just don't want you to make fun of it.
Oh, that's sweet.
I was like, yeah, gotcha. I get it.
I've gotten that a few times. I remember there was a
day. And I hadn't made fun of it. Go ahead. What were you going to say? You had that.
I remember a day where Amanda wasn't feeling well and she just wanted to watch comfort movies. And I was like, absolutely, let's do that. Would you pick three movies and we'll watch them? And she's like, okay, but like, watch them, not like shit on them.
Like, oh, but to shit on things is the most fun.
I get it. Okay.
No, saying that's funny that you would be arguing that with
me. I know. Come on.
Come on. Having bile in my bloodstream feels good. I think it at least bears some discussion that this came out. Supposed to come out December 92, came out February 93. So this was likely made, and I'm sure this will come up with disclosure, this was made after the Clarence Thomas hearings. So it's a little, the way they play it is very strange. Like, certainly not very 2023, this scene where she's like, typing and he looks down at her cleavage and smiles, and then she notices that he was doing it and likes it.
My hat's off to Laura Flynn Boyle in that, because it is feels like on paper it's like she smiles like she likes it, but the way she delivers it actually gave it some dimension of like, I can use that.
Yes,
you know,
the ensnaring or the, the yes, that's true. But
I don't think that's on the page. I think that's something she brought to it. You know?
I mean, that happened in fourth grade for me, the Clarence Thomas thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say someone looked down your top.
And I liked it.
And I said, I can use that. You're going down, teacher.
Reverend.
Reverend Jim from Taxi, the character.
When... Clarence Thomas hit, that was like, I remember a news event where I was like aware of what was happening, what it was about. And it's silly now to think about, but as a 10-year-old boy, I remember being like, have I sexually harassed?
Really?
What have I done that would be...
How amazing of you.
Now, look, I didn't want to share this because I didn't want to seem like I'm virtue signaling. But it was just scary enough to see somebody come out and be like, he said inappropriate things to this woman and he might not get to be... I don't mean scary. It was just like, it made me reflect and go like, well, what if I wanted to be whatever?
Good for you.
Is, well, I bring it up because I do take... I don't think I was alone. I think there's probably lots of boys who had that response to the Clarence Thomas hearings where you go that. And I do think probably there's been really good stuff cooking for the 10-year-old boys who grew up during Me Too.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're going out. I think they're probably, not probably, they're more likely thinking about consent and what that means. Like,
certainly it is more, there's more awareness of it now. And that's fantastic.
And so just to know that not to be like, the Clarence Thomas thing didn't work out, but it helped boys be good. More like, that's not to say, but people view it as a failure. It's like, oh, Clarence Thomas it was like Brent Kavanaugh. It doesn't matter. He still gets to do what he wants. And it is like discouraging, but there is some hope that it's like, whatever the outsider's perspective is like, regardless of how that goes on, you can internalize it.
Yeah. I wish I was that aware. I think I remember that. I was older too, but all I remember is just the Saturday Night Live stuff. So I knew the names and I knew the Coke can thing. And
but
that's
I'm sure
how,
you thought like, you were like, well, what is considered, it probably makes you ask a question of like, what's considered harassment, right?
I don't think I had that kind of understanding of it. My family just wasn't like, there was never a dinner table discussion. There was no discussion of it.
Yeah.
It was only like, I only knew it as a reference. Like I know most things historically. I don't know the depth of it.
I'm not going to say it's because I think it was like, I was an anxious child who was always scared of
being elected to the Supreme Court and really screwing up.
Doing something wrong, getting in trouble without me knowing it was like a big fear. I did something I didn't even know it was wrong, but now I'm going to get punished for it.
Gotcha.
And so whatever that news event was, it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Should we, is there anything?
Yeah, let's do a best kill and then we'll read some Zenos and come back with our ranking.
Great. Peter Cookie Eater had a temp but couldn't keep her. Should have been the title.
Timothy Hutton.
Timothy Hutton has a button.
I got to go with the hand shredding, even though it's not a kill, just because at least it's something interesting happening here.
Yeah. I'm going to go with hornet mouth.
Oh, good. Hand shred a hornet mouth. Doo-dah.
Also, the last thing I'll say about this movie was, if it was reshot and they had to figure out an ending, I love that they were like, okay, where does this end? Oh, steamy industrial zone. Like, Terminator 2, Alien 3, whatever. Yeah, those movies, they always had to end with people high up on grates with steam and pipes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Why? What is that?
Come to the cookie factory. Meet me. There's an emergency. Meet me at the cookie factory. If someone said, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch The Temp, and the climax of this movie is someone saying, there's an emergency. Meet me at the cookie factory.
I do think all roads lead to Bond, baby. That is totally like people got it in their brains that you go to a new location for the big thing. Yeah. I mean, I know that storytelling probably is old.
Well, especially when this was old trope for Bond, so it had found its way into every other genre at this point.
Yes.
All right.
We love you, The Temp.
We love you. Max Healy, shout out for you. Instead of my name, can Matt do his award-winning toilet flushing sound effect? No, he can't. If he's not up for it, could he please have Irvin Kershner tell H.R. Giger that I'm sorry I keep mispronouncing his name as H.R. Giger on my Hold My Popcorn podcast episode of Alien? All right. Paul, as Gus from Love, shout out this name.
I love you, Mickey Dobbs, but I love you, James Spencer, more.
This is just a regular old shout out. That's nice. Danielle Baranowski.
Danielle Baranowski.
Shouted out. Thank you. This is a shout out for Rob Hennen's daughter, Maddie.
Maddie.
Will be thrilled when she's here. Oh, shout out to you, Maddie.
Rob Hennen's daughter, Maddie. Hey.
This Rebecca Mary would like a shout out for her mates Shit Talks, their group chat name. Oh,
hey.
From Southern Lawyer. Hello, Shit Talks and Poopy Walks. Because when I was representing Poopy in court, it walked regardless of all of its indictments. So Shit Talks and Poopy Walks.
Beautiful.
I'm sorry, Matt. We were supposed to give you a shout out on the Single White Female episode for Tony, your partner, and he would die metaphorically if he received a wish from you two in the voices of either Marge Simpson or Southern Lawyer.
Hey, I think because we were coming at this late, we do all of them.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay.
Oh, I just wanted to say, for Matt Allen's partner, Tony, happy birthday. I wish you a homie.
Tony, I'm just as worried about Marge as you are. She does not sound well, but I would wish you a happy birthday.
And Tiffany's voice, I realize, is Marge Simpson just kind of pitched higher. So.
Yeah.
Tucker, I'm wishing somebody else a happy birthday. It's Tony.
Tiffany, I'm Chucky.
That's good. He is Chucky.
Happy birthday, Tony. You got us in an email?
Oh.
Okay, well, we already got that for
Tony
you.
Tony Zuko. Right.
Hello, Jenny D. Look at me, I'm Jenny D. Lousy with podcastery.
And finally, most nefarious member of Pinhead's court.
They say Pinhead is the most nefarious member of Pinhead's court, but it's actually Christine Morse is the most nefarious member of Pinhead's court.
Ooh, she's a beautiful painter, painting. Too. Thank you for sending those pictures. Thank Love you, that. Baby Xenomorphs.
And hey, we talked about, thank you, Baby Xenomorphs, and we talked about this when we went through the, but I just saw this mentioned on the live screen. We talked about when I came through the doormat. Congratulations on the article in the LA Times, buddy.
Thank you.
Everybody who's listening to this, run right now and listen. Read that article. It is, I said to Matt, it's kind of like the perfect article you would want written because it shows what makes Matt great as a creative, but also what makes Matt great as a person. So
that's very sweet of you. And I said to you when you came in that when I see those profiles of people in the paper, I don't question them. But when you see one on yourself, you go like, why would you do this? Although that being said, the author, Tim Grieving, is a podcast listener. And so
very
he's
well
a wonderful
written.
Guy and knows his... you know, for better or for worse, knows his Gorley verse.
So. Yeah, no, it was very well done. And it was, when we were talking about with your wife, Amanda, lovely wife, Amanda, she said it was holistic. It feels like it's a full picture of you. So
yeah, it was
people
very
should read it.
Unexpected and flattering, but thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Out of 13, what are we going to give 13. The temp? Let's see. We both gave After Hours 12, 13. Mm-hmm. The Bedroom Window, I gave a 6.5 and you gave it a 7.5. That's going to be a curious benchmark to hold it up against. Bad Influence, you gave a 10. I gave it a 9.5. Shattered, we both gave an 8.5. Single White Female, we both gave a 9. Where do you hold this up against your 7.5 on The Bedroom Window and my 6.5, which are our lowest scores thus far?
Yeah, I'm going to put this at a 6.
Me too. Yep, solid 6.
Because I guess The Bedroom Window, where that was weird and this is baffling, there was some sequences in The Bedroom Window where I would get
interested
and have whatever that thing your brain does when you're watching a movie where you're like, oh, I jumped into it and now I'm absorbed. That never really happened with The Temp. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But we love you, The Temp.
We do love you, The Temp. I was interested in an external way, like a meta way, of same way I watched the prequels, just how does this happen? Mm-hmm. But the movie itself never really got me.
Yep.
All right. Well, next week is Disclosure, which I'm very excited about.
Yes, me too. Me too. Because when you mentioned the... we were talking about the Disney adult releases are hard to get. Yeah. Two nights ago, I watched Quiz Show.
Oh,
which
I
is kind of hard
because
it's like a Hollywood Pictures release. But that was written by the guy who wrote Quiz Show. And it was supposed to be directed by Barry Levinson, but he had to do something else. So Disclosure is the next year. So in a sliding doors, the writer and director of Disclosure could have made Quiz Show, but they're very different movies.
I'll say. Well, all right. We'll get into it more next week. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more Gorley and Rust content, head over to patreon.com/withgorleyandrust to get episodes ad-free and a whole week early, plus monthly mailbag episodes and feature-length watch-along film commentaries of your favorite horror classics. That's patreon.com/withgorleyandrust. Email us at withgorleyandrust@gmail.com, and your questions might be featured on a future mailbag episode. With Gorley and Rust theme song by me, Matt Gorley, and performed by Townland. You can find us on Instagram as Townland Band, as well as Paul's fantastic band at Don't Stop or We'll Die. And why not rate and review With Gorley and Rust on Apple Podcasts? It'll help us grow the show and keep us trucking through the Jasons and the Michaels, the Leatherfaces and the Chuckies, the Aliens and the Candymans.
Candyman.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.